All right, here we go. It is the debut of the Rob Staton Show here on PuckSports.com. It's all brought to you by Superior Linen Service. I'm in Seattle, Washington. I'm snug into my starter's jacket from when I was like 12. It says it's a large, Rob, if you're watching this on video at PuckSports.com or YouTube. It's like a small now on me. I'm in Seattle, but Rob, of course, if you don't know Rob, I know you know Rob. Rob Staton, Seahawks Draft blog. Again, his weekly appearance is going to be brought to you by Superior Linen Service, family-owned and operated since 1926. They provide the highest quality of products and service to the greater Puget Sound area. Get a free quote today at suplinen.com or give them a call at 253-383-2636. Check out Rob's work at SeahawksDraftBlog.com. His YouTube and Twitter page at Rob Staton. Rob, you tell our listeners who are listening now, watching, you got a cocktail in your hand. Where are you doing the show from right now?
So I'm in the United Arab Emirates. So I'm about 40 minutes away from Dubai. It's in England, Pork, we don't have anywhere we can go that's warm. You know, if you want to go anywhere that's warm, if you want to get any kind of sun, you have to fly somewhere a long way away. So for me, that is Dubai. We've come here a few times, and kids love it. So they're all tucked up in bed at the minute because it's about 9 p.m. I've got a scotch and looking forward to talking some Seahawks with you.
This is the first time, I think, in Seattle media history that we have someone doing a show from Dubai. We are breaking the rules today as we record this, and you are in Dubai. Okay, so I don't know if I'll ever get to Dubai. I may get there. I kind of want to get there. It looks interesting. What is it like? I have this notion of what Dubai is, but what is it? You guys vacation there? So tell me about it.
So first of all, the airport's amazing, and it kind of sets the tone for everything that you're going to see. Like, everything's really modern. They really do try to create a good impression over here. Dubai, the main city, has got the tallest building in the world, and they've got like a whole bunch of skyscrapers that have come up. The rest of it is pretty much desert, you know, when you're driving through. So we've driven to a place called Ras Al Khaimah, and as you're sort of driving down the main roads, there's just camels everywhere, you know, on the side of the road. It's got like camel farms everywhere, and then you sort of... We're on this like man-made island. It's like a big loop that comes, you know, off the side of the United Arab Emirates, where they've just built this island, and then they put like these different resorts on it. So I'm on a man-made island slash beach. We're about 20, 30 minutes away from one of the, you know, the liveliest. I think it's actually the most highly rated place to visit in the world these days, like Dubai, because you can pretty much do anything here. You can go skiing here. They've got like a huge indoor ski center.
So wait a minute, like they have like fake snow indoors? Yeah. And you can go skiing?
Yeah, they've got like the biggest one in the world or something, and then they've got a huge mall, and then, like I said, they've got all of the touristy things you'd want to do. But really, you know, for me, a trip like this, Puck, is to come and dump the kids at the kids club, get one of these.
Just keep drinking.
sit with my wife and just chill out for a week.
Okay, I feel guilty. You're on, and it gets not vacation. And this is the thing I want to steal from you, you Brits, you Europeans. It just sounds so much better when you say you're on holiday. It just does, doesn't it? I'm on holiday rather than I'm on vacation. I wish I could steal that from you.
Vacation sounds a little bit formal for me. Like, yeah, we're going on a holiday. Yeah, it just sounds great. And, you know, you can sing the Madonna song as well while you're doing it. So it's great.
All right. Dubai, Rob, that's where Rob is right now. He's in Dubai doing the first Rob Staton show here on PuckSports.com. And again, you can watch it on YouTube. Please leave comments, rate, like, subscribe. Also, if you're listening to it, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and, of course, Amazon Music there as well. And again, Rob's weekly appearance with us is going to be brought to you by Superior Linen Service, family-owned and operated since 1926. They provide the highest quality of product service to the greater Puget Sound area. Get a free quote today. Visit them at suplinen.com. Give them a call at 253-383-2636. So you're getting a little R&R in Dubai, because coming up is probably like your Christmas. You got the NFL draft is coming up on April 25th. You get knee deep into this draft stuff. What do you look forward to the draft more than the actual season?
No, I mean, I still think that football is essentially, at the end of the day, what, you know, it's all building towards. You know, you want to watch that first game of the season. That's probably the most exciting thing, because you kind of start the year, how is this going to play out? You know, you never quite know how a season's going to unfold. So I think sort of opening weekend of the season's probably the most exciting thing, especially when you've got a team that's good and that can contend. But the draft's just, it's just something a bit special. We don't have anything like this over here. You know, all of our sport over in England, the best teams, the biggest teams just dominate, you know, youth sports. We don't have college soccer or college cricket, for example. You know, everybody just sort of, when the age of like 7, 8, 9, 10, gets signed up to play for Manchester United or Chelsea or whatever, and that's it. You never see them until they, you know, ultimately play for the top teams in world football. You know, so to have something like a college football structure and then to see those players playing in front of like, you know, 50, 60, 70,000, 100,000 people, you know, and then to go to the NFL is just really unique. So I find it really, I just find the whole process really fascinating, but there is something a bit special about draft day. And this is the best time, Puck. You know, when you've kind of got the last 3 weeks where you're, what's going to happen? What are the Seahawks going to do? When it's all done, it's kind of like when Christmas ends. It's like, wow, yeah. Is that, oh, that's all, that's it. You're going to pack everything away in a couple of days and wait till next year. And, it just ends abruptly.
Yeah, this year is so exciting, right, Rob? Because it's brand new. You know, you've got, I mean, of course, you got John and you got his whole crew that's still running the whole thing, but you got a brand new coach, a brand new coaching staff, a brand new philosophy. Now we get to know, there's always been this dynamic when it's come to John Schneider and Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll, of course, had the final say on things. He was the president of football operations. Now that's the title that Schneider has. So when we've never known the answer to this, but when it came down to the decision in the draft, were they in lockstep together on these decisions, or was there instances where, let's say, Pete Carroll overrode, you know, a John Schneider decision? We're going to find out now, maybe a little bit more into the thinking of John Schneider at this draft.
Yeah, we definitely are. And it's fascinating to see how maybe this first draft pick is going to shape the identity of Mike McDonald's team in Seattle. You know, what are they going to try and build? You know, are they going to try and build an amazing defense with this defensive-minded head coach? Are they going to try and create an offensive juggernaut, you know, by really sort of building around that offensive line and eventually making a bold splash on a quarterback? You know, how is this going to look? And, you know, all of those options seem to be on the table for this draft as well. You know, it's not a foregone conclusion what they're going to do with that first pick. So I think we're going to learn a lot in this first draft. Well, I think we're already sort of learning little things with what John Schneider's been saying over the last few weeks, and, you know, the way that he's viewed maybe Geno Smith, the way that he's talked about, you know, Dee Eskridge wouldn't be on the team if the old coaching staff were here. Yeah. It does seem, you know, a lot like he is doing things differently. And it's fascinating. I can't wait to see what they're going to do in this draft.
Okay, so let's get to that right now. And then we'll circle back, because I want to get to the offseason moves, what they've done. Because it was a kind of typical with these guys. It was slow. It was a slow burn. Then there was a bunch of frequent moves and kind of moves kind of coming in every day. Up at Seahawks Draft Blog right now, SeahawksDraftBlog.com, which, of course, Rob writes for. It's terrific content. It's unbelievable. Check out his YouTube page, Rob Staton on YouTube, social media, Rob Staton, but SeahawksDraftBlog.com. This guy, I don't know how he does it. He is pumping out so much damn content left and right. It's unreal. And this is a side gig to a degree, but he's got a whole other job that he works for BBC. But in their latest one, the Seahawks defensive line, there's been mock drafts that have had an Oregon guard there. Dane Brugler's had that. Offensive line, defensive line. I think when we look at this team and where they want to go, I think we all can agree in the last few years, what's been frustrating about it is they just have not been good up front. And they get pushed around. They can't protect. They can't really run block. Defensive line is a problem. Your latest one, should the Seahawks go heavy defensive line in the first round? Talk to me through what you wrote there at SeahawksDraftBlog.com. Why does it make sense to go along those lines on the defensive line?
I just think it's a discussion worth having, because to me, Puck, and I don't know how you feel about this, I think it looks pretty obvious that they're going to go offensive line. Like, all of their moves so far, paying Leonard Williams, bringing in Jonathan Hankins, re-signing Darrell Taylor, you know, filling out the linebacker spots, filling out the safety spots, it all seems to to suggest that they're saving the offensive line, which has had very little attention, just like a $3 million contract for George Fant and a backup guard from the Rams coming in. It seems like they've set everything up with the draft to go offensive line. So that would make some sense. I don't think anyone would be getting the pitchforks and the torches out if the Seahawks spend their first pick on an offensive line or even go offensive line with their first two picks. But how should they build this team? You know, is the pathway to being a contender simply having the most rounded, balanced roster that you can have, investing a bit in your offensive line, investing a bit in your defensive line, spending a little money, bit of money at linebacker, spending a little bit of money here at receiver, whatever? Or is it to really attack one side of the ball and go, we want to make a defensive line that can terrify opponents in the way that the 49ers, who, by the way, have spent, how many first-round picks did they spend in a row? It was Arik Armstead, DeForest Buckner, it was Nick Bosa, it was Solomon Thomas, it was Javon Kinlaw. You know, it was like every single year they were spending a first-round pick on a defensive line. And lo and behold, not all of those picks worked out, but they created this formidable D-line, this great pass rush, which caused the Seahawks and other teams so many problems and was the foundation for them becoming a contender along with Shanahan's offense. So what is best for the Seahawks? Is it just to fill that hole at the offensive line and feel, okay, we've invested in that now? Or should they be prepared to maybe build this thing a little bit slower, embrace that they're not necessarily going to be a Super Bowl team this year? And perhaps the number one priority should be, maybe we can build a fantastic defensive line and that can be the identity under Mike McDonald. I'm interested to know what people think about that possibility and what you want to think about it, because I think a lot of people look at the O-line and think they've got to go there.
I just look at it as is whatever direction they want to go in. I think those are the first two things I want to address. I just want to address whether it's the offensive line first or we go defensive line. But I just think ultimately that needs to be addressed, both of them. I mean, it's just been such a problem for them for so many years, and why they haven't been able to kind of take that next step is because they don't have somebody in the middle. They don't have somebody on the outside that wins one-on-one. They don't have a Bosa. I mean, not many teams do. Not all the teams have that, but they don't have a guy who can not scheme you up, just one-on-one beat your ass. And then on the offensive line, I mean, they've been looking for a center since they traded Max Unger to New Orleans, and it's just been a revolving door. You know, it's funny, you probably get this when you talk football over there or any sport, right? We get caught on these cliches with all sports. I really think when it comes to football, it's I know it's a cliche, but if you cannot win the line of scrimmage and cannot win the trenches, you're just not going to win. You're not going to win consistently. Sure, yeah, you can be flashy on the outside and all that. I want them. I wanted it last year. I was glad with when they did a couple of years ago with Cross and Lucas. I want to invest as much resources as they possibly can to upgrade both sides. But I will kind of fall more in line with you. Defensive side on the D-line has been an issue for a long time. I mean, gone are the days where you don't have Michael Bennett, Cliff Averill, and anybody up that could, you know, provide anything in the middle for you. Brandon Mebane. I mean, we're going way, way, way back where they just haven't had any of that kind of talent. And so that's what I think last year why it made it so appealing for Jalen Carter. And then they decided to pass on Jalen Carter for whatever reason. Not like they made a mistake with Witherspoon, but you know, they had that guy that would have fit perfectly, but they chose to, you know, probably the stuff on the off the field that was too much for them. But yeah, I would like to see it. I think they've, I don't know, what do you think? I think they've got pieces on, you know, on the outside. I mean, I think linebacker is going to still be a work in progress. I think secondary is okay. But defensive line, if they can shore that up, don't you think it makes the guys in the back end better?
It absolutely does. I think what a lot of this is going to come down to is what is the actual truth on Abe Lucas's knee. If they don't think he can come back, you're now looking at, well, a real void at left guard, a major question mark at center, bit of a question mark at right guard, and then again, a huge void at right tackle. And then that kind of makes your mind up. And this is a great draft for right tackles. You almost have to take one. You have to invest in that line, because otherwise, how are you going to be able to function as an offense with the offensive lineman that they've got? And if they're just going to fill it in with mid-round picks that are rookies, I don't think that's going to work for 2024. And this whole new era under McDonald and Ryan Grubb offense may fall apart in year one just because they haven't got the chops up front on the O-line. But if they are somewhat confident that Lucas can come back, and with Fant as insurance, it's a little bit easier, it's a little more justifiable to say, okay, we'll go and get one of the guards from Michigan, for example, because they just beat everybody up last year.
Right.
It's a bit more understandable to do that. And then to say, okay, now let's have a look at that defensive line. Jaron Reed's got one more year in his contract. Jonathan Hankins is not going to be a long-term fixture. He's going to be a one-year deal to play in Seattle. You've really only got Leonard Williams for 3 years. Cam Young's on a rookie contract. There's not a lot else there in terms of long-term building. And I just think increasingly as time has gone on, I completely agree with you that the trenches and your quarterback are really the deciding factor as to whether or not you're a contender. But you have to, what you have to be able to get after the opponent's quarterback. In the big games, you have got to be disruptive. There is nothing more terrifying aside from having to play someone like Mahomes, like the Niners did in the Super Bowl late in the game, thinking he's going to win this and there's nothing we can do. The only other thing is going into somebody else's backyard in a road game and thinking that pass rush is going to eat us alive. And people come to Seattle and have an easy time at the moment. If you have a fantastic pass rush with that crowd noise revved up again under a new coach, that will win you a lot of games of football.
And that's part of the problem, don't you think, Rob? I mean, you know, the last year, and you know, maybe even the year before, but especially last year, there's no passion inside that building. I mean, that building has passion. It's not because of the offense. No, and really no fan base is like that. A fan base gets after it because of how the defense performs. And part of the reason, because everyone has this theory, well, no one's going to the games anymore. There's not enough passion for the Seahawks fan base. I think they've lost their way. No, it's because the defense has lost their way. And the defense was the one that inspired that fan base to make all that noise, to get after, to be a difference maker. Because you're right. Last year, too easy to come in here now. It's just too easy to come in here and push people around. Look at the Steelers. That was embarrassing last year. That was one of the most embarrassing games that in probably in the Pete Carroll era. Because that team wasn't better than you. That team shouldn't have come in there with that quarterback and done that to you. And they did. And they had their way. And it was probably the worst game I've ever seen Carroll and this regime coach and play and execute.
Yeah, they were soft. They were bullied. I went to the Thanksgiving game against the 49ers, and there was a lot of Niners fans there. Don't get me wrong. But the atmosphere, the crowd noise was amped up at kickoff. It took one drive. The Niners just marched straight down the field. It was too easy. The guy sat next to me just turns to me. I've never spoken to him in my life. And he just goes, here we go. And that's exactly, and it was, that's exactly how it felt. Everybody felt deflated. It was freezing cold. I've traveled 5,000 miles to watch this thing. And I'm thinking at halftime, I could just go back to the hotel and have one of these scotches. I don't need to be here. I'm going to the Apple Cup, you know, tomorrow or Saturday. I don't need to be here for this. Yeah. So that is how it felt. And that's how it's felt for a long time in these home games. The home record stinks, you know, and the best way to get that back, aside from simply winning football games, is to have a defense that brings the crowd into it and keeps the Seahawks in games and make sure that they're the ones bullying opponents, not letting the Steelers, like you say, with Mason Rudolph coming in and running it down your throat.
Okay, who do you like there then? They at 16, who do you like for the Seahawks in the first round? Give us a couple players when you've looked at the draft and all the post-combine stuff. Who are a few players that could be available there on the defensive line that you would like and would be a good fit for Seattle?
Well, the one that everybody talks about is Byron Murphy at Texas. And, you know, you just have to look at the guy. He's got very limited body fat, but he's 300 pounds, which is always a good sign, I think, with a defensive tackle. He's got a huge, you know, without wanting to be too vulgar, arse and thighs.
Oh, you know, there's no rules now. We can say we can say wanker. We can say whatever we want now. Yeah, he's got a huge ass.
Yeah, he has. That kind of trunk is what you want to see from a defensive tackle. He does this amazing thing, Puck, where I've never seen a player do this before, but he goes down on one knee to leverage against defensive linemen, and then he uncoils like a cobra, explodes through contact. He disengages. He gets down the line from that starting position of anchoring on one knee. He is more disruptive than a game wrecker at Texas, and he did have the benefit of playing alongside. I don't know if you've seen this guy, this 380-pound beast, this Tavondre Sweat, who played alongside him. But just the thought of him and Leonard Williams with, you know, Jaron Reed, Jonathan Hankins, Cam Young anchoring from nose tackle, it's enticing. It is interesting. There are other players. You know, there's this Darius Robinson guy who I think he's very similar to Eric Armstead, who can play inside out, who's just an absolute monster. You know, I interviewed one of his former teammates who said he taught him how to play football. High character guy. You know, I was listening to Chris Long earlier today talking about him, saying he's an absolute beast. This is Darius Robinson, who was at Missouri. There are other guys, you know, Braden Fisk at Florida State just had one of the best combine performances that you will ever see. He's got a few injury concerns, and that might knock his stock down a little bit, but in terms of testing, in terms of work rate, he plays every single snap like it's his last. We've seen Mike McDonald loves to stunt guys inside, you know, from defensive end, and then have his defensive tackles run around the line and then get to the quarterback. There's plenty of evidence of Braden Fisk doing that on tape. So, you know, there are plenty of defensive linemen in that sort of, I would say, 16 to 50 range that you could target to come in and have a big impact. There's edge rushers as well. Chop Robinson. You know, I would recommend anybody who's listening to this, go and check out Chop Robinson's tape, because it's whenever you make a comparison like this, you always have to be careful. But there are little flashes of Micah Parsons within Chop Robinson. His get-off is unbelievable. Same with Braden Fisk. His get-off is unbelievable. The way he bends the edge is exactly like Micah Parsons. Tremendous athlete. There's just something there. And then there's other edge rushers as well. Jared Verse may well be there at 16. Latu from UCLA, used to be Washington, might be there at 16. Some very interesting defensive linemen. And if you want to go in that direction and you want to build your identity that way, the Seahawks will have a chance to do that. But, you know, granted, there are also some fantastic offensive linemen that are in this draft as well.
I wish somebody at some point in my life will describe Puck as, God, he's got a real good get off. You know what I mean? I just really would. It just, it, rather
I
than...
I wish someone would say that I had a great ass and thighs.
All right. Now I'm going to ask you the tough question, though. Okay, we just talked about defensive line here. Defensive players, offensive players. If Michael Penix is there at 16... what do you think they would do? Well, he might be there, right? And what do you want them to do?
I want the Seahawks to draft a quarterback. You know, I want them to, I want John Schneider to see somebody who he truly believes can be the answer to this franchise. I do have some faith in Schneider as a quarterback evaluator. I do believe in the talk about Patrick Mahomes, because that was reported seconds after he was drafted by Kansas City, by the NFL Network or ESPN or whoever, which would Rappaport, Schefter, whoever it was, said the Seahawks would have drafted him even with Russell Wilson if he lasted to their pick. That was immediate. That was long before we knew Mahomes was going to be Mahomes and win three Super Bowls. He wanted to trade Russell Wilson away in his peak for the first overall pick in 2018 to draft Josh Allen. Josh Allen's a pretty good quarterback. He's drafted Russell Wilson. I trust the guy's assessment of quarterbacks. And I'd grant there's a little bit of picking and choosing here, because he also traded for Charlie Whitehurst and seemed to love Drew Lock.
Hey, he won a playoff game, all right? That's touchdown true. Jesus won a playoff game.
And fantastic hair that I'm very jealous of.
Beautiful.
But I trust John Schneider. So if he sees somebody in this draft and he says, that's the guy, I'm all in on that. I'm very happy to see that. The Seahawks have got to draft a quarterback. This year, next year, they have got to draft a quarterback. I am bored of hearing John Schneider say every single year, you know, Ron Wolf was speaking to me and he was teasing me about never drafting quarterbacks, and it's 2 in 14 years. Enough. You've got to start drafting quarterbacks, you know, and you've got to start investing in that position. If he is there at 16, I think that he could easily be a very strong consideration because of Ryan Grubb's connection there. I have to believe that Ryan Grubb likes Michael Penix, that will feel he's a scheme fit. The talk on the street is they want to attack every single blade of grass. Michael Penix will do that. Is he a perfect player thrown underneath in the short game? No. But is he going to throw 40-yard layered passes in between two defenders to all angles of the football field? Yes. Is he going to force the ball to DK Metcalf, which I think John Schneider wants to do? Yes, because he did that to Roma Dunze. He didn't turn down one single 1v1 with Roma Dunze last year. So I think they would seriously consider him. I know somebody at Washington, the University of Washington, who is convinced that Penix is going to come off the board by the 13th pick of the latest.
Mm.
He's been convinced throughout. And if you've detected in the media, there's been a bit of a subtle shift in the last few days with people saying Chris Sims, he's a top 20 pick, and Kurt Warner saying he's going to be a high pick, and then other people saying he's going to go very, very early, and people are now souring a little bit on someone like Drake May, for example. So I think there's a good chance that one of these quarterback needy teams are going to take him off the board before 16, and he won't be there. But if he is, I think there's at least a chance that he could be Seattle's pick.
Okay, so then what do we, again, Rob Staton with us. You can check out his blog, SeahawksDraftBlog.com. His weekly appearance here at PuckSports.com, all brought to you by Superior Linen Service, family-owned and operated since 1926. They provide the highest quality of products and service to the greater Puget Sound area. Get a free quote today, SupLinen.com. Give him a call, 253-383-2636. What do you make of the acquisition, the trade of Sam Howell? I mean, I liked it on the surface. I liked what he did here in Seattle. Now, it was against that defense. I think there's a lot to like with what Sam Howell can bring, but the acquisition of Howell, did they tip their hand that they won't go quarterback, or, hey, we can still draft the guy? But first and foremost, what did you make of the trade to acquire him?
I think it screams, we don't believe that the quarterbacks that we like are going to be available to us. And we cannot afford to go into this draft with just Geno Smith and either nobody or some horrible veteran quarterback who is, you wouldn't want to put him in the game. I think they wanted to invest in a young quarterback who they can develop, who could, if he needed to play a couple of games as Drew Lock had to do last season. You know, Geno Smith is not a young player, but if he comes in, that he's going to have to come in and give the Seahawks a chance to win a football game. And I think they couldn't risk the quarterback that they like being there. So I think that's why they went after Sam Howell. However, if they truly believe in one of these quarterbacks, one of these top quarterbacks in this draft, I don't think the Sam Howell pick precludes them from taking that guy as well. I mean, look, this is the team that spent, in 2012, a lot of money, not a lot of money today, obviously, but 12 years ago it was, on Matt Flynn, retained Tavares Jackson, still drafted Russell Wilson, and knew they wanted Russell Wilson, by the way, even when they signed Matt Flynn, and then gave Russell Wilson the job and just ate all of the money that Matt Flynn was being paid. So I don't think Geno Smith's contract is that big that a similar situation couldn't happen. I think what's going to happen, though, is all of the quarterbacks they like are going to be off the board, and that's why they've traded for Sam Howell.
Again, Rob Staton, if you're watching or and you're listening, he's dialing us up from Dubai on a family vacation, first time in Seattle media history. We have had a guest on from Dubai. We are breaking news today, and we are a breaking show of record here at PuckSports.com. Do you think there's a chance Howell shines and unseats Geno Smith, or this is Geno Smith for 17 games next season?
I think Geno Smith will be the starter. The thing about Sam Howell is, if you watch a highlights tape of Sam Howell, Puck, you can convince yourself that this is a guy. But then I watched every game that he played at North Carolina and gave him a fourth round grade, and he went in the fifth round. And when you actually look at little thing, like 21 interceptions is not going to get it done in the NFL. Mm-hmm. However, people can say, the defensive line didn't do this, or the seven of them were unfortunate or whatever and stuff like that. 21 picks is 21 picks. And if you look at his PFF grade, it was in the same ballpark as Zach Wilson last year. So he's shown something, but he's also shown stuff that needs to be worked on. He's not the most charismatic guy to listen to. He's not somebody who's going to necessarily walk in that locker room and blow everybody away. And I think that for that reason, a lot of the guys who maybe have already got lasting relationships with Geno Smith, it will make it hard to transition away from Geno Smith unless Sam Howell absolutely blows everybody's socks off in training camp, or Geno Smith just absolutely has a horrendous start to the season. So I think Geno Smith will be the quarterback. But we'll see how it goes. We'll see what they do. I think John Schneider is on a mission to get a quarterback for the long term in this for this franchise. And that could be in this draft. If not, then I know as soon as this draft finishes, Puck, I know what I'm going to be doing over the summer, and it's going to be watching quarterbacks, because he's going to be on that until he addresses it.
Okay, I want to rapid fire through some stuff. You're on vacation. I don't want to keep it too long from your wife and your scotch. More importantly, I don't want to keep it from your scotch. You drink as much of that as you possibly can during this. In fact, I think every episode now moving forward, and maybe we'll, in addition to Superior Linen Service, we get you a scotch endorsement. Do you know what brand that is? We can get you, I'm going to send you a bottle of your favorite scotch. And I think every time that we do this, it'd probably be harder for me to enjoy it with you, because it's going to be in the morning time for me. But it's not like I haven't had a morning drink in my lifetime. Off-season moves. Let's try it. Matt, Leonard Williams, on board with that? You liked it?
Yeah, happy with it. You know, it's a lot of money, isn't it, Puck? It's a lot of money. Yeah. He's got to deliver for that. And let's put it this way. If you said, do you want Leonard Williams for $21 million or do you want Damian Lewis for $13 million? I'll take Leonard Williams for $21 million.
Okay. I'm indifferent on it. There was nothing that he blew me away with last year, but I kind of understood what the situation they were in. I hope he has a better season than he had last year. It wasn't like he was terrible. I just didn't think it was, he was an overwhelming success, I think, a year ago. George Fant, I mean, that seems like an insurance policy probably for Abe Lucas.
Yeah, his cap hits, I think, it's just over $3 million, $3.4 million. So that's what you'd expect to pay for an insurance tackle who can – if he needs to play a bit of left tackle, he can do it. If he needs to play right tackle, he can do it. He can probably slot in at guard as well. I think that's a really good signing. I think it's a really intelligent signing for somebody who can play multiple roles. And if George Fant has to play three games in a row next season, I don't think anybody's going to panic about that.
The linebackers, they get Dotson from the Bills. They get Jerome Baker from the Dolphins. These guys are now going to replace what you lost in Bobby Wagner going to Washington and then Jordan Brooks going to Miami. Short deals, one-year deals, so not a lot of a commitment to them. But what do you think of those two signings there of Dotson and Baker?
Yeah, I've got a friend who used to work at the BBC who was obsessed with the Dolphins. So I reached out to him and says, what's Jerome Baker like? And he said, do you know what? He's a really good player. He's not going to have like 10 pick sixes next season. He's not necessarily going to have 8 sacks, but you will never have to worry about him. And I thought, that's good enough for me. That's kind of what the Seahawks need in that position. And then with Dodson, he's intriguing, isn't he? Because it was like 10 games he started last year, and he was like the number one PFF linebacker. So look what Mike McDonald turned Patrick Queen into an epic bust into a guy who like half the Seahawks fan base was desperate for them to sign him free agency. So I think that if he can do that with Patrick Queen, he's obviously had a huge impact on a very talented player in Roquan Smith as well. Let's see what he can do with these two guys. They're probably going to draft a linebacker at some point for some depth as well. So intriguing and interesting to see how they get on.
I know that Dolphins fan, okay? You tell him hello for me. I met him back at the U.S. Open.
You know Cy.
I know Simon. Oh, yeah. It was. You know why I went up to introduce myself to Simon Clancy, who we're talking about, BBC, is those microphones. So their booth, when we were at Chambers Bay for the U.S. Open, was right next to where we were broadcasting the radio show, and I would always look over there. And those, what do you call the microphones? What are they called?
We call it a windshield.
The windshield, but for people who have never seen it in England or at the BBC, they hold the microphone. It's not like me,
like a lip mic.
Yeah, lip mic. Like I have it on a stand, but he was holding the lip mic like up. Remember Ted Lasso, right? If you watch Ted Lasso, when the soccer commentator Arlo White. Every time they would show, right, it's Arlo White, isn't that who it is?
Yeah, it's Arlo White.
They would show Arlo, and he's holding up that microphone, which is like touching his lips.
Oh yeah, I mean that's what I use when I'm commenting on the game. I have it, and it has like a little bit that you literally place it on your top lip and you speak into it.
Yeah. So he had that, and he was, and I'm like, what in God's name is that thing?
So do you guys not have those?
No, we don't. No. that was the first time I ever saw it. So I went and just started talking to him about it. And then, you know, he's a charismatic guy. We were BSing and he's a huge, soccer fan. So we ended up getting him tickets to the Sounders game and all that. He was a blast. It was a blast being next to him for that entire week. And then we just remained in contact. So I know who you're talking about. Right when you said I'm a BBC Dolphins fan, I know exactly what you're talking about. Noah, let's end on this one. Noah Fant. What did you think, Noah Fant? 2 years, $21 million.
Comfortable with it. It's not a great tight end draft. I wouldn't want to go into the new season banking on a rookie from this draft class to bail him out. I think Noah Fant's got some untapped potential. You know, he's a former 10, top 20 pick. I think he's had the misfortune of having the Vic Fangio / Drew Lock time in Denver. And then, with the greatest respect, the Shane Waldron and Pete Carroll time in Seattle. And now let's see what he can do with Ryan Grubb and this offense that I think are going to find ways to feature him in the passing game. He seems to me like somebody who could be really dynamic in the passing game, and we just haven't had the offensive coordinator to get that out of him so far. So I think that could actually be, I know a lot of people have said, spend that money on the offensive line instead. I think that could be a really value signing compared to like what TJ Hockenson got paid in Minnesota.
I agree with you. I like Noah Fant a lot. And I'm really, really intrigued what Noah Fant can do in Ryan Grubb's offense. I can't believe we've gone 30 minutes, and I wrote it down in my notes somewhere, but then I lost it. Okay. What do you make, last thing, and I promise I'll let you go. What do you make of them with your shit? He's shaking his head if you're just listening to this. What do you make of this flirtation, of this idea of bringing Jamal Adams back?
No. Just say no. Oh. At this point, I'm worried about this. This worries me for a number of reasons because, look, I've got a lot of respect for John Schneider. This is the guy, I always feel like you have to mention this. This was the guy that built the Super Bowl team with Pete Carroll. So he deserves his props for that. But I think John's got an ego. And I'm a little bit worried that John is looking at this Jamal Adams trade as the worst thing he's ever done as a GM. And has probably said to Mike McDonald, hey, do you think you could still get something out of this guy? And Mike McDonald's kind of like, well, he's the new coach and he wants to impress the new boss. And he's kind of like, yeah, I can get him in here. And, you know, I'm a coach. I can, like, just give me anybody. I'll turn them into a player. And they've maybe sort of convinced themselves that maybe there's a way to salvage this thing. Like if Jamal Adams came back and had a great year, you know, John could turn around and go, see, the trade wasn't a bad trade. It was just unlucky, or we just needed this coach or whatever. And Mike McDonald's saying he loves Jamal Adams all of a sudden. And I wanted to just, when I heard Mike McDonald say that he loved Jamal Adams, I just wanted to say back to him, yeah, well, about 80% of your fans don't love Jamal Adams, Mike. You know, we are sick to the back teeth of this guy. I don't want to see him play for the Seahawks again. After what he did with that fiasco over the reporter and calling out the reporter's wife, it made me feel just angry enough to want to see him embarrassed on the field in the next game against the Niners. And I was relieved when they gave him the shepherd's crook afterwards and he didn't play again after that. Yeah. I don't want to see him in a Seahawks jersey again. I don't think that's the only thing. It's not like that's an isolated instance. I bet if you knew behind the scenes, there was probably a couple of other things that if people, like Jamal Adams is not the most positive influence. I bet anything, if you knew a couple of things behind the scenes, that's the case. I don't want to see him back in Seattle. Draw a line under it. It's a new era. Time to move on from all of that. It's not exactly like other teams are hammering down the door to get him. Just let him go. Let it go.
There he is from Dubai. Rob Staton, Seahawks draft blog, brought to you by Superior Linen Service. Family owned and operated since 1926. Provides the highest quality of products and service to the greater Puget Sound area. Get a free quote today, supplinen.com. Give him a call at 253-383-2636. Enjoy the rest of your vacation. We will talk next week. Be sure to go visit SeahawksDraftBlog.com. Also search Rob up on YouTube to search Rob Staton. Follow him on social media. Promote Seahawks Draft Blog. What do you got up there right now for people to go check out?
Well, there's going to be a lot of stuff coming up over the next 3 weeks. I'm working on a really big interview, which hopefully is going to come off later this week as well. So stay tuned for that. And if you like long form writing, then SeahawksDraftBlog.com is there. And also, you know, everybody who is listening to this, make sure you subscribe to this new pod and this new venture for Puck, because sounding fantastic, man, and loving every show so far.
Thanks, buddy. PuckSports.com. Rate there, like, subscribe. Comment section is open. I finally figured out that part. Not made for kids. You can watch it, listen to it, Spotify, Apple, Amazon, wherever you find your podcast. So we'll have another edition. This is a Thursday's edition, so Mike Garofalo, NFL Network, also on the Thursday episodes. So you'll get that there as well. Rob, until next week. And for you, the listeners, we'll talk to you soon. As always, we promise to be better.
No shirt, no shoes, no ties.
Anybody like to smoke some pot?
Yeah. I was born to love you. I was born to lick your face. I was born to rub you. But you were born to rub me first.
What do you need my address for?
We'd like to send out a mailer.
Mother of mercy, I don't speak Japanese!